From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Gary Lilly.
Good morning, America, and to all of our military personnel serving around the country and around the world, we thank you for your service. Good morning to all of my veteran brothers and sisters. Welcome home. And good morning to our mates listening down in Tasmania and Australia. We know you're out there. And to our newest affiliate, KIXW, in Apple Valley, California, the voice of the high desert. My name is Gary Lilly, CB, Chulai 66, MCB3, and I'm your host this morning. Joining us is our executive producer, Dale Thronberry. Dale, where'd you park your helicopter this morning?
We're out on the pad out in front of the building. We'll be back later to pick you up.
Dale never liked flying at night, so he flies during the day. Our air boss this morning in the control booth, keeping everything under control, is he's TDY from the Screaming Eagles, 101st Airborne, Bob Gould.
Hoo-ah!
Hoo-ah! Airborne all the way, right?
All the way, man.
Okay, today we're going to dig deep into the world of spies. But first, we're honored by a special guest representing all of the moms who have ever lost a son or daughter while serving our country here on this Mother's Day weekend, Ruth Boast. Ruth, good morning, and welcome to Veterans Radio. Hello, Ruth. Ruth is from Allegan, Michigan. Okay. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Ruth. We're going to get her back on the air. Ruth's a special lady, and her son Michael was a dog handler. He was with the 42nd. Well, let me find that. Well, Ruth's son was a dog handler. Michael, he was in killed on Mother's Day and about 39 years ago. Got the dates wrong, probably. Now, here we go. May 14th, 1967, just 3 days before his 21st birthday, Michael was with the 52nd Infantry Platoon Scout Dogs, IPSD. He was working with A Company, of the 1st of the 327th Infantry of the 101st Airborne Division when he was killed in action. Bob, Ruth has wandered away from her phone. We spoke to her just a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, Gary, why don't we go ahead into the welcome home?
Hmm? I was just going to suggest that. Who are we welcoming home this morning, Bob?
All right, welcome home. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who have been stationed around the world in the service of our country. Dateline, Frankfort, Indiana. After serving for about 1 year, escorting convoys, 32 soldiers of the Indiana Army National Guard's 151st Infantry Regiment Detachment 1, F Company, arrived home to a parade along Jackson Avenue to a ceremony at the city's American Legion Post. Dateline, Rome, New York. 30 New York Air National Guard members of the Northeast Air Defense Sector Security Forces came home after a six-month deployment to Manas Air Base in Kyrgyzstan. I actually said that right. Kyrgyzstan. We all know where that is. Dateline, Gulfport, Mississippi. 200 members of the 132nd Military Police Company, based in West Columbia, South Carolina, arrived in Gulfport before heading home. They spent a year working in some of the most violent zones in Iraq, including Baghdad and Sadr City. Dateline, Alabama. 75 soldiers from the 1103 Combat Sustainment Support Battalion, Alabama National Guard, arrived home in Eufaula, Alabama, to the song Sweet Home, Alabama, played by the local high school band. Dateline, South Carolina. A crowd filled the drill hall at the Buford Readiness Center to welcome home 55 National Guardsmen of Buford's Troop B, 202nd Cavalry, who have been deployed in Afghanistan since April 2007. Okay, Gary, I think that we have Miss Ruth on the line. Give it a shot.
Ruth Boast, good morning. Welcome to Veterans Radio. Ruth, you are wandering around. You're too lively this morning.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, Welcome Home is sponsored each week by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University. For more information regarding the Marine Scholar Program, visit them online at avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. Welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com.
Gary Lillian Associates is now Sperry Van Ness Lillian Associates, the newest Michigan affiliate of a leader in the commercial real estate industry, Sperry Van Ness. More than 800 Sperry Van Ness advisors in 136 markets sold nearly $11 billion in commercial real estate last year. That was done by putting the client's interest first, thereby generating maximum return for every property. When we list a property, we immediately place it on 6 internet commercial listing services and email it to 40,000 prospective buyers and 60,000 commercial brokers. We offer to split the commission 50-50. That means your interests, not ours, are placed first. To learn more, call Sperry Van Ness Lillian Associates Commercial Realtors at 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Be advised, there is a difference.
Okay, we're playing a new game. Where in the world is Ruth Post? Ruth, I understand you're there.
Yes.
Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Well, I'm all right.
Wonderful. Ruth, I already prepped the people a little bit about your son, Michael. He was a dog handler with the 52nd Infantry Platoon Scout Dogs, working with A Company, the 1st of the 327th Infantry of the 101st Airborne Division, when he was killed in action.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of kid was Michael when he was growing up?
Well, he was a very good son, but he was a naughty little boy. I don't mean a bad boy, just a naughty boy.
Full of mischief, right?
Yes.
Did he like dogs as a kid?
Yes.
And did he ask to be a dog handler?
Huh?
Did he ask to be a dog handler?
I have no idea.
When was the last time you heard from him? He was killed on Mother's Day, and it was just 3 days before his 21st birthday.
Yep.
Do you know where? When was the last time you heard from him prior to that?
I think it was the day before.
And back then, it would have been nothing but letters, no phone calls, emails, of course. What was he saying?
He just rambled.
Okay. Just a normal, I remember my former...
He did not complain about where he was or nothing.
Was he pretty proud of his service?
Very.
And do you know where he was when he was killed?
Yeah, but that's been a long time ago.
Okay, real. All right. How, when you found out, what was the way that you found out?
I was at work, and they came to my job. Or they went and got my husband first.
Okay.
And they came, brought him, and they wouldn't let him talk to me until he told them what he wanted.
I've got you. And I assume that this had to be one of the worst days of your life.
It was.
Still with you today, even after all these years?
Pardon?
Is it still with you today after all of these years?
Absolutely.
Right. Ruth, you're representing all of the moms, all of the Gold Star mothers, whoever lost a son or a daughter in war. And, you know, we all of us who served in the military always look up to, look up to you people as our moms, too. So what I want to say on behalf of everybody in the military serving today, on behalf of all of the veterans who've ever served in our military, happy Mother's Day.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for being with Veterans Radio, Ruth Boast. Mm-hmm. And, Bob, we're going right into our first guest this morning, who is Christy McCrackis. She's a professor of history of science at Michigan State University and a visiting scholar at Harvard University. Christy McCrackis, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, this is fun. I've always been interested in spying, and so what got you interested in spying? You wrote a book that was a history book club feature called Seduced by Secrets. Mm-hmm. What got you interested in spying?
Into spying, boy. You want the short story, right? Not
short
the
story,
long,
yeah. We've only got an hour.
Well, I lived in communist East Germany when I was a student, and I was studying the Nazis, and I was kind of intrigued about what was going on behind the Iron Curtain. I really wasn't interested in spying then, but after the Berlin Wall fell in November of 1989, we kept hearing about the East German secret police and intelligence agency, the Stasi, the Ministry for State Security, and I just couldn't believe that was all happening, you know, behind my back, and I didn't know about it. So, you know, one thing led to another, and I wasn't a spy. Some people think I was, but if you want to hear more, I can.
No, that's tell you fine. More. That's fine. I had on the flyer the announcement of today's show that they were Simon. I'm going to pronounce it the American way. Wiesenthal, or is it Wiesenthal?
They call him Wiesenthal, yeah.
Wiesenthal. He was the Nazi hunter, the very famous one who actually tracked down Adolf Eichmann and brought him to justice. Mm-hmm. He said they were worse than the Gestapo. What is your response to that?
Oh, well, that's an exaggeration. The Gestapo was, of course, the Nazi secret police, and they put a lot of people to their death. There was murder. There was, they brought people to concentration camps. There was genocide. That was a pretty ruthless secret police. The Stasi, first of all, East Germany didn't get involved in genocide. They didn't murder a lot of people. So they were different. I mean, the similarity is that they were both totalitarian regimes. But the Stasi was actually not only a secret police. In any case, it was an intelligence agency as well. And they had a lot of informants. There's no question about that, as do all secret police, KGB, other East Bloc countries. But it wasn't as bad in magnitude and in moral shortcomings as the Gestapo.
But I after I heard from you about that headline, and I did a little more research on it. Turns out Wiesenthal was talking about the ratio of employees or secret agents per citizen, and what the KGB, as an example, had 400 80,000 full-time agents with a population of 280 million. That's mm-hmm. one agent for every 5,830 citizens. The Nazis had one for every 2,000, and it turns out the Stasi had one for every 166 East Germans.
Yeah, the you're talking about the ratio, the informants
right.
to the greater society. I mean, if you specify and if those numbers are actually accurate, you could say there were more informants. But I just think you have to be careful because, I mean, when most people think of the Gestapo, they think of them schlepping people into concentration
right,
camps and throwing
right.
them into the crematorium. So,
but the Stasi was fairly ruthless, was it not? Or?
Sure, yeah. I mean, they weren't, they were there to enforce, East German state security and policies. And if they did something that, if you were an enemy of the state or that you did something that violated their laws, they were pretty ruthless in prosecuting you. Plus, they were kind of paranoid.
I wonder if paranoia is something you need to be a spy.
Probably, yeah. You can get pretty paranoid when you study this stuff.
What is the main goal of spying by country against country?
Oh, well, obviously most people say you spy against other countries to protect your own national security. That's how all countries justify it. And whether it's the KGB or the CIA or the Stasi or the Mossad. But you raise a good point because they were also spying against other countries, not just on their own citizens, which is what, Wiesenthal was talking about. The CIA says, well, we spy because we want to protect our national security and we don't want people invading us like they did in Pearl Harbor or 9/11, and therefore we have to be aware of any surprise attacks from enemies. And actually the Stasi said the exact same thing in their foreign intelligence unit.
One of the things I picked up from reading your book was the magnitude of the economic and industrial spying done by the Stasi on the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were very good. I mean, this points to how thorough they were, and that's probably why they had so many informants, that they're first rate, German efficiency. They had a lot of spies. And actually, I want to underline the point, they had a lot of spies in Western Europe and even in America. And they had a lot of spies who were Westerners. They weren't East Germans. They were either West Germans or Americans or people from other countries. And they had them spread out all over the world. It was pretty astonishing. But economic, industrial, and military espionage were key foci, not just for the Stasi, but also the KGB. And the KGB, the successor organization, still does it.
You raise a point about people spying against and working against their country, and I've always wondered about that. What are the main reasons that, let's take Europeans or West Germans, why would West Germans spy against their own country for East Germany? There can't be that many communists out there, can there?
Oh, well, gosh, first of all, you're talking about traitors, right? I guess that's the
right.
definition of a traitor is when you betray your own country. Starting with, a lot of course, this took place in the Cold War, remember? It was from the 50s to the 80s. And during the 60s, there were communists in West Germany, and they took advantage of the leftist movement and said, hey, there were West Germans who were radical and leftist who believed in the cause. And back then, they didn't think of the Stasi as in the same way as people did after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And so they recruited sympathizers to communism. And if you sympathize with communism, you really didn't think you were doing anything wrong. And I've looked at a lot of the psychology of, well, I don't psychologize, but I paint portraits of these people in the book, and it was really interesting just to find out, the way they ticked. Like, why did they do it? You're right. I mean, that's a big step. I mean, you're crossing the Rubicon by betraying your own country. I mean, first of all, it's not only that it's a bad thing, but you could land in jail. And so I think that the Stasi was just really good at recruiting people. I mean, basically, they didn't say, well, you're going to be called a traitor and you're going to land into jail. They told you, well, it's unlikely you would land in jail, and, we're the better Germany, and you believe in peace, right? And West Germany is not peace-loving. We're peace-loving. They used all these arguments. I mean, I talked to people. Some of them were incredibly naive, actually.
Even after the fact, they were still naive?
after the
after
fall.
The fall
of the wall.
After the fall and after the Stasi was exposed.
Oh, well, yeah, that was interesting because I interviewed a guy named Dieter Feuerstein. He actually betrayed military information to the Stasi, its Foreign Intelligence Department, which went on to the KGB and was incorporated into their military, into their weapons. And he was a big fish. He was a big spy. And we were talking. He was a really nice guy. And then he said, first of all, his father had worked for the Stasi and the KGB, and it was kind of in the family, and his father died, and he felt he was honoring his father. Plus, he was a little bit leftist, and these people were his friends. And after the fall of the wall, he heard about all the corruption, he heard about the informants, and he began to doubt what they were doing. Of course, if you don't know everything, you know, what are you acting on? So it's more complicated than people think. It's not just like, hey, you're a traitor, you know.
Right.
Why do you do this? You're a horrible person.
Would these people get... How many... let's take West Germany. Do you know how many informants there were in West Germany before the country was reunified?
Well, first of all, you have to be careful how you use the word informant, because they're informants and they're spies, agents, and that's a really big difference. So informants are people who rat on their neighbors and friends and colleagues and report them to the secret police. Agents are something quite different, and that's why the Stasi has an image problem as well. Agents are spies. I mean, there have been good spies in history too, right? There have been people who, you know, helped countries like Richard Jorge, you know, warned the Soviet Union of the Nazi invasion, et cetera, et cetera. So they're often good spies who are heroes who help their country. So I just want to underline that they had agents in West Germany, not necessarily informants.
Oh, okay.
Some people put that figure, as to answer your question, as large as like of course, over the whole course of the Cold War from, you know, the 50s to the 80s, some people say it could be like as many as 20,000, and others say it's more like at the end it was probably 1,500 people at the end in 1989 West Germans who were actively spying for East Germany.
Besides philosophy, political philosophy, would they get paid for this?
Oh, yeah. Some people did it out of greed. They got paid, especially the businessmen. You mentioned economic espionage.
Right.
So a lot of people just saw it as a business deal. And a lot of businessmen made a lot of money that way.
Didn't the Stasi grade every time they got something like blueprints or formulas or whatever? Wouldn't they put a grade on the value of the information they just?
Yeah, they did. It was all really well organized. So if you were spying for the East German intelligence agency and you brought, let's see, what goodie could you have brought that was great? Let's say they were working on computers and you gave them a 1 megabit chip back then. That was a big deal, and they would give you a 1, which is like getting an A in class. Yeah, so they graded them, you know, from 1 to 5, and 1 was the highest, and 5 was the lowest.
I read in your book where they would put an economic value on it, like for every mark that they paid the agent, they would get 150 marks worth of information in return. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, right. Yeah, they said, well, we saved this much on research and development, so we didn't have to do it ourselves. We just stole the secret, and we saved on research and development.
So if they paid 3,000 marks for something, and they got 150,000 marks or 300,000 marks in value out of it, that was a pretty good business deal in their eyes, right?
Yeah, or so they thought, yeah.
Right. What about blackmail? Did that factor in?
Well, you know, people think spy agencies use blackmail a lot more than they do. And when I started researching all this stuff, you know, I would ask, I interviewed a lot of former Stasi people, and, you know, I'd mention blackmail. And, and once I started researching things and looking into cases myself, that's really not a very good method to use on people. So if I wanted to recruit you and I blackmailed you, you're less likely to give me good stuff than if I use other methods to recruit you. So blackmail wasn't used as often as people think. I mean, it was used occasionally. And I can give you a case, for example, where, you know, it really doesn't work. For example, there was this West German politician, and they took pictures of him sleeping with a prostitute or whatever, and they said, well, we're going to show these to your wife if you don't help us out. Well, what he did was he laughed at them, and he took the pictures to the West German police and said, hey, you know, they're trying to blackmail me. So that was the end of that story. So that illustrates how it doesn't work. So there are better methods for recruitment than blackmail.
We're talking this morning with Christy McCracky, professor of history of science at Michigan State University and a visiting scholar at Harvard University. Christy, you wrote the book Seduced by Secrets. For those that are interested in it, how can they find that book?
Oh, well, you can get it everywhere. Barnes & Noble features it in their new history section, Amazon, Borders. My press has been great. You can get it
Wonderful.
Pretty much everywhere.
Well, good. I'm enjoying the book. I didn't get a chance to finish it, but it's fascinating. Let's talk about people, say, in the military. People, Americans. Did they recruit any Americans?
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to ask me that or if you wanted to avoid the issue, but... Yeah, that was really
dirty laundry.
That was really startling for me. I found out that they actually were quite good at either recruiting or they just fell in their lap. Military personnel, especially stationed in Berlin, I lived in Berlin in the mid '80s. That's how I got into this, and I know there were a lot of military people there.
What type of information would they get from our military?
Yeah, well, it depended whether you were in the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, but their two biggest spies, codenamed Kid and Paul, I mean, they stole the store. They were in the Air Force, and they were involved in electronic eavesdropping on the Teufelsberg in West Berlin, and they passed on super-secret information. It was in the... Special Access Program, which is even more secret than atomic secrets, and they passed them on to East Germany, and one guy spied for the Stasi and the KGB, so he was a double dipper, they sent that along.
What was his motivation?
Well, he did it out of greed, and he admits that. I visited him at Fort Leavenworth in prison. He's still serving time, and he was very candid about his motives. He said, you know, I did it out of greed, just money. And, you know, that's the problem. A lot of military personnel don't make a lot of money. So it's tempting when someone says, hey, you want to sell me some secrets? And you go, yeah, I need some extra money. So it was funny when I was interviewing him. The NSA people, when they were interviewing him, said, you know, why didn't you just, sell something else, like, drugs or something? And he said, well, gosh, drugs. I'm not a drug dealer. I don't have access to drugs. I have access to secrets.
Oh, my word. So there's he had his ethics and his morality, right?
That's right. You know, he wasn't a lowly drug dealer. He was a white-collar criminal. But to give the people, you know, the other guy did not do it out of greed and money. And a lot of people think, well, you know, during the Cold War, most people spied for money. Most Americans did, sadly. A lot of the West Germans had ideological motives. But there was another guy who was a lot younger who, you know, spied for psychological reasons. He was a homosexual in the Air Force, and he didn't really fit in, and he was, you know,
Why did that motivate him to spy?
Well, he was just kind of screwed up psychologically, so, I mean, he was only 18 when he was in Berlin, and he was on a pub tour, and he just went over to the station at the border and said, hey, let me in, and, he went over to East Berlin, and they were nice to him. They could see he wasn't in a good psychological state. So it's not like he walked over and said, hey, I want to sell you secrets. He kind of walked over drunk, and then they recruited him, and they kind of, burnished his ego.
We've got a minute. What was the most surprising thing that you found out in all of your research?
Well, the most surprising thing is how similar all their techniques were to American techniques for spying, like, invisible ink and then some really chilling things I found, which maybe I can tell you in the next segment about spy technology I found out about. It was really like a window into all these secrets we're not allowed to know about in America.
Probably in any country, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was almost illicit researching this, but I can tell you more, but they might shoot me.
Oh, okay, so you picked up stuff that you weren't supposed to pick up?
Well, I don't think a lot of people want you to know some of the things I learned about.
Okay, we're going to a break, and you're listening to Veterans Radio Network on Ave Maria Radio. We'll be right back with Christy McCackus.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant Lloyd Burke killed more than 100 North Korean soldiers in a one-man assault on their position. Details after this.
College isn't cheap. In fact, it can be downright expensive. But the Air Force has a way for you to get that college education. If you attend classes while on active duty, we'll pay up to 100% of your tuition. And you could have more than $35,000 for school waiting for you through the GI Bill. For more information, call 1-800-423-USAF or log on to airforce.com. This message brought to you by the U.S. Air Force and this station.
Intense enemy fire had pinned down leading elements of his company, committed to secure commanding ground. When Burke left the command post to rally and urged the men to follow him toward three bunkers, impeding the advance. Dashing to an exposed vantage position, he threw several grenades at the bunkers. Then returning for an M1 rifle and adapter, he made a lone assault, wiping out the position and killing the crew. Closing on the center bunker, he lobbed grenades through the opening and with his pistol killed three of its occupants attempting to surround him. Ordering his men forward, he charged the third emplacement, catching several grenades in midair and hurling them back at the enemy. Inspired by his display of valor, his men stormed forward, overran the hostile position, but were again pinned down by increased fire. Securing a light machine gun and three boxes of ammunition, Burke dashed through the impact area to an open knoll, set up his gun, and poured a crippling fire into the ranks of the enemy, killing approximately 75. Although wounded, he ordered more ammunition, reloading, and destroying two mortar emplacements and a machine gun position with his accurate fire. Cradling the weapon in his arms, he then led his men forward, killing some 25 more of the retreating enemy and securing the objective. Burke's heroic action and daring exploits inspired his small force of 35 troops. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Pat the Handyman and his team is ready to help you with your remodeling, repair, and painting projects. Call Pat the Handyman at 734-260-1158. That's 260-1158. Pat the Handyman is a veteran-owned business.
Len Pitlack, CPA, is an award-winning consultant for the U.S. Small Business Development Center. Let him use his 25 years' experience to bring you, as an individual or small business owner, his professional and courteous tax and accounting services. Give Len Pitlack a call today at 734-993-1313.
You get to the top, get hooked in, and then you look over the edge. I was like, no way am I jumping off this tower. I'm staying right here. I'm like, am I ever going to be good enough to be a Marine? When it was all said and done, watching the color guard raise the American flag, I thought, I am a United States Marine.
PFC Keith Palka knows you don't join the Marines, you become one. Visit Marines.com or call 1-800-MARINES.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com. Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnegat Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's S-C-H-R-A-D-E-R-Yachts.com. RadierYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Trader Yachts anywhere there's water. Trader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
And we're back on the Veterans Radio Network on Ave Maria Radio. We're talking this morning to Professor Christy Makrakis, Professor of the History of Science at Michigan State University and a visiting scholar at Harvard University. Professor Makrakis wrote a book, Seduced by Secrets, and it is fascinating. It's all about the East German Stasi. Professor Makrakis, spying, like anything else, is a people business. And therefore, there's as many different motivations possibly as there are people working in it. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the two Americans that spied against us that were so damaging to our military. And you talked about the motivation. What were some of the other notable people that you came across?
Who spied for the East German Ministry for the Stasi?
Who spied for the Stasi, regardless of where they came from?
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, I mean, the funny thing is, people always, when you're researching this and they don't tell you people's names, you just see a code name. You think, oh, I wonder if that's some big politician or a big CEO or whatever. And I guess a lot of people were just regular. They were small fish. Like maybe they were a manager at a company. Maybe they just worked at a company if they did economic espionage. There were some like big spies in politics and people who were recruited from intelligence agencies. Like they had that, the East Germans were so good that they had penetrated most of West German intelligence. So Gabriela Gass was a really famous spy who worked for the Stasi, and she worked for the BND, West German Intelligence. And I talk about her because she used invisible ink. Huh?
Tell us about her.
Oh, she was a fascinating woman. I finally met her. I was really excited. She's very, very bright. It's funny. When she was a student, she lived in East Germany, so you see a parallel there. But she lived in East Germany, and she was writing her dissertation on about women in East Germany, and she was recruited. And people claim that they used the Romeo method, that is, like the man seduces the woman to get them to spy for them. But she claims she had political reasons for doing it. So the East Germans were really good at spying because they were very patient. Like they would spend years recruiting you. They didn't, in America, people sort of bring a pile of money and say, okay, here, will you spy for us if we give you a lot of money? Whereas the East Germans and the Soviets, the KGB, are very patient. So they worked on her for years, and then they sort of encouraged her to work for the BND, which she did. And she was considered one of Marcus Wolf's best agents. Marcus Wolf was the head of foreign intelligence, the HVA of the Stasi. His reputation is mythic. I mean, he's considered the king of the spies among intelligence agencies. So Gabriela Gast was one of his star spies. And, she used a scarf for invisible ink, which I thought was intriguing. But I finally met her last fall, and she's a very bright woman, a little misguided, but, it's interesting.
How many of these former spies did you meet?
Oh, tons. Dozens. I met dozens of agents and officers and leaders of the East German intelligence agency secret. Plus, I met and got to know a lot of West German intelligence people and CIA people and KGB people. And that was one of the, since I wasn't a spy, I really wanted to understand how spies ticked. So I got to know a lot of people. I still maintain a lot of friendships. I'm close to a lot of people. And even a defector who I profiled, I got to know really well. So it helped me actually understand his motivations and write about him.
You did a huge amount of research on this. How much time did you spend researching on it? And was it full-time or part-time?
Well, it was mostly part-time, and I, worked on it, on and off for many years. I didn't really actually decide I was going to write a book till, 98, 99. I was in Germany for a whole year then. And so I had 1 year of sort of full-time research, and then I would go to Germany for summers, or I would do things now and again. And so if you're reading, you know, I did a lot of unconventional things, like I, you know, visited people in prison, I visited dog handlers, I, you know, got to know spies, I mixed invisible ink, I...
Tell us about the dog handler connection. We happen to have a lot of dog handlers listening this morning because of our first guest, Ruth Bost.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard you mention that her son was a dog handler. Well, that was really intriguing. You'll find this interesting. I'm a dog lover myself, and I had a dog, and so I was really intrigued when I heard about the Stasi had this method of tracking people using their smell.
Okay.
And anyone who owns a dog knows that dogs have an incredible sense of smell. So after the wall fell, you know, the media kept scanning these jam jars with yellow dust claws in them. And people said, oh, how weird and bizarre, you know, what are these yellow dust claws? You know, they followed around dissidents and vacuum-packed their smell with dust claws.
The Stasi did this?
Yeah. I have a whole chapter on it. So I wanted to delve deeper into the real story behind these mythic dust claws, because there's a lot of mythology behind it. So I decided, well, first of all, I wanted to take a course in dog handling to learn about this specific method, because it's a unique method. I mean, you know, the dog lovers out there who have trained dogs know that they're tracking dogs and they're scent dogs, but they're also scent differentiation dogs, which is a method that it wasn't actually the Stasi that pioneered this method. It was the East German police. They had a dog training school in Pretz, which was which is very famous. So I called that school up because I wanted to learn how to I wanted to learn this method, which is called scent differentiation. It's not just tracking or tracking dogs.
What is scent differentiation?
I don't know if I should leave you in suspense to read it in the book, but I can tell you briefly. I mean, so basically everyone has their own smell. And it's like collecting fingerprints on people and, you know, putting them in a jar instead of collecting your fingerprints. And then the dog can match the smell to the person. So if you have a suspect and a lineup, and the dog has your smell and the smell from the scene of the crime, that they can match up a suspect it's sort of fingering the criminal or whoever did it.
If people want to find out more about it, they have to read your book, don't they? Seduced by Secrets.
Well, I hope so, but I don't want to give everything away. But I can mention that. So I did call up this police school because I wanted to learn this method, and I described this scene in the book. But the guy yelled at me and said, "Oh, those guys aren't here anymore. They're like with the worms under the earth." And so I was kind of dejected that I couldn't learn how to use this method. But part of it was that, you know, the method was because the Stasi supposedly used it and pioneered it. You know, no one wanted to hear anything about it. They just wanted to bury it in the past. And then I had seen a dog handler's name in the files, so he lived in this provincial town in southeast Germany, and I Googled him and found out that he was driving a taxi. So I called up his taxi service and really thought I wanted a taxi, but he was really friendly and said, "Well, come on down and I'll show you how we did this method." So I took the train down and he taught me how they did the method.
Okay, well, people will have to read the book to find out about that. We've got a little over a minute left in this segment. One of the chapters is Hero, Traitor, Playboy, Spy. Who was that?
Ooh, Hero, Traitor, Playboy, Spy. That was a fun chapter to write. Yeah, that's a defector who was an East German. He was trained as a physicist, and he was recruited by the Stasi, their foreign intelligence unit, the HVA, to work for them when he was a student in Leipzig. And for 7 years, he was an officer of the East German Ministry for State Security, and then he decided to defect to the West. His initial name was Werner Stiller, and he's actually a famous spy in the annals of German intelligence history. And he, after 7 years of working for the Stasi, he decided to defect to the West for a variety of reasons, which you can tell from the title, Hero, Traitor, Playboy, underline Playboy, Spy. He had a lot of girlfriends. So, he was married and had two kids.
That was his weakness?
Yeah, that was one of his big weaknesses, yeah. And so, he he met a woman, and this woman could get him over to the West, so he kind of seduced her, and so they went to the West. But I guess I should leave you in suspense.
We're coming up on the break, so again, people have to read it in your book. You're listening to Veterans Radio Network on Ave Maria Radio. We'll be back in a minute.
Gary Lilly and Associates is now Sperry Van Ness Lilly and Associates, the newest Michigan affiliate of a leader in the commercial real estate industry, Sperry Van Ness. More than 800 Sperry Van Ness advisors in 136 markets sold nearly $11 billion in commercial real estate last year. That was done by putting the client's interest first, thereby generating maximum return for every property. When we list a property, we immediately place it on 6 internet commercial listing services and email it to 40,000 prospective buyers and 60,000 commercial brokers. We offer to split the commission 50-50. That means your interests, not ours, are placed first. To learn more, call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates Commercial Realtors at 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Be advised, there is a difference.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com.
There's always a moment of truth where I say, look, it's either put up or shut up. And it was time to put up. I had crossed that thin line. It was 100 plus degrees. We were hot. We were on fire. We were yelling our hearts out. You could feel the intensity rising. Even in our tiredness, even in our weakness, even in our pain, we continued to push. I told myself, you can suck up the pain for another mile and a half, and you will be a Marine. Not many people believe that I could do it. I don't know where I got the energy from. I don't know where the pain went to. But all I know is that I had what it took. I am a United States Marine.
PFC Darrell Willis serves his country as a Marine. Will you? Visit Marines.com or call 1-800-MARINES. The few, the proud, the Marines.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And you're back on the Veterans Radio Network on Ave Maria Radio. This morning we're talking to Professor Christy Makrakis, author of Seduced by Secrets, the story of the East German Stasi, their secret police. Before we get into, I wanted to ask you some of the things about the technology that they used and invented. But before that, we were talking about people. I mean, after all, this is everything's a people business. Mm-hmm. What was the punishment for people that were caught?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, actually, Americans who spied, in America, you know, spying is a much bigger crime than it was in Cold War Germany. It's funny, in Cold War Germany, you would sit in jail for a couple of years, up to 7 years, which isn't very long, whereas in America, you can get up to 40 years. Jim Hall, the code name Paul, who spied for the Stasi and the KGB, is still doing time, and I think he got 40 years, and he's been there since 1988 or 89.
Right.
And there's this famous radical trio in America who are still doing time, and they got 26 years. So we're much fiercer in America about sentencing spies as the Germans were. So in Germany, most of these industrial spies only got a couple of years, and part of the reason was because they supposedly didn't damage the West German industry as very much, because the East Germans couldn't use a lot of this technology they stole.
But we don't have the death penalty for spying, do we?
No, they were thinking of reinstituting it after Aldrich Ames and Robert Hansen, so that people take this seriously.
Are you letting the telephone get away from your?
Oh, here we go. Is that better?
Yes, a lot better.
Okay.
The methods of doing this. How badly were we hurt by militarily? This says Veterans Radio, and the veterans are most interested in that.
Mm-hmm. You mean in America or NATO? The West or
NATO and America. I mean, after all, NATO's sort of the first line of defense over in East Europe, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they did a lot of damage. I mean, they stole like a lot of top secret NATO documents. I mean, there was a very famous West German who spied for the Stasi, who worked at NATO headquarters, and Reinhard Rupp, and he was a biggie. And together with a lot of my military spies, they did a lot of damage. I mean, what would happen is that the reason the KGB liked the Stasi, it was really their best friend, is that they would haul in all this military, Western military technical information or general military information, and pass it on to the Soviet Union, because the Soviet Union could really use it. And the East Bloc was just part of them.
About the West German tank, the Leopard? Is that what it was called?
Yeah. I had a couple of spies who stole blueprints and plans for the Leopard and passed it on to the East. So that's one concrete example, yeah.
That was almost right from the start, wasn't it?
Yeah, that Agent Gorbachev, who I feature in the beginning, he passed on blueprints for that. Yeah, that was right away in the early 60s. And as the Western military developed different versions of that, they would pass on those. So they had that pretty down pat. But they even had worse stuff than tanks. I mean, the CIA and other American intelligence agencies like the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, used to write white papers about all our military technology that was incorporated into Soviet military technology.
One of the MiG fighters, the latest MiG fighter for the Soviets, is almost a duplicate of our top-of-the-line fighter plane. And
that doesn't surprise me. Yeah, I mean, people are worried because Russia is still doing the same thing. They're still stealing Western secrets. It's an old habit they've been doing since the atomic bomb.
I remember hearing many, many years ago, the company that designed and manufactured that top-of-the-line airplane for us, fighter aircraft, that they had a secret room with all the maps, and it was so secret that it was so secure that you couldn't get into it. That's where the employees would hold their parties, because nobody would get in there.
Yeah, there was a famous case about the boys and the satellites, and they used to mix margaritas in these special rooms, but it turned out the guy was working for the KGB, and he passed on secrets. It was The Falcon and the Snowman. It's a famous book written about that case. But anyone can betray their country and spy. I mean, and there's so many motivations. Like you say, it's a whole range of human motivations for doing it. Although Americans are, prone to do it for the money, especially if they're not well paid.
Okay. What were some of the little gadgets that they developed for spying?
Oh, yeah, that's one of my favorite topics is spy gadgets. They're gadgets that you use to for spying, like agents use, like whether it's the American agents or the West German agents, for passing on material, like miniature spy cameras, and you need invisible ink if you want to keep secrets. And I cracked some of the and reproduced some of the invisible ink formulas they used, and they were pretty interesting.
How miniature would these cameras be?
Oh, well, that's another technological marvel. Some of them were as big as my thumbnail. If you look on the cover of my book, actually, I was kind of surprised that they featured this miniature camera, and it's about as big as my thumbnail, and that's my hand on the cover of the book.
So you're a model, too. What about video cameras? I understand they could video right through a little tiny hole.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are two types of video cameras. The one you're talking about is basically for observation. You mean the ones they put in hotel rooms?
Right.
So they would drill a tiny 1-millimeter hole, and I think the one you might be talking about is called the Beko. It's an observation camera. It has a very long lens to it, and, yeah, they would put it up against the hole and actually take very good pictures. That was a pretty sophisticated camera. But they also used video for on single settings to take pictures of stolen blueprints, and you could hold a lot of material on these video cameras. They were popular back in the 60s and 70s. In the 70s, they used them a lot. So what you'd do is you'd film your family at the beginning of the tape, and then you put it on the still setting, and you would take pictures of your documents. So even if they opened up your camera and looked at the film at the beginning, they would just see all these family photos and they'd give it back to you.
I thought about the movies when they would show that little scene or a little flash of popcorn that, consciously you didn't see it, but subconsciously all of a sudden you had a desire for popcorn. They can't do that anymore, but that was one of the things that they used in movies. So maybe they learned it from Musasi.
Yeah.
Subliminal. Couldn't come up with that word. We've got about a minute left. Tell us about your favorite gadget that you discovered.
Well, I don't know if I'd call it favorite or intriguing. I found out about something, aside from the smell samples, I found out about spy dust, which is, it's not really a gadget, but it's a way of tracking people using chemical or radioactive isotopes, and that was pretty chilling. And I wouldn't call it favorite, it's just that it's intriguing. My favorites are concealments, actually. And I've got lots of pictures of those. That's where you hide all your secret material, like in household items, like the deer featured on the book. So those are my favorites.
Okay, spy dust. How would they get spy dust on people?
Do I have time to tell you?
Real quick.
It's not really dust, but it's chemical or radioactive isotope. So you just brush it onto the item you want, and you can use a Geiger counter to see it, or else a UV fluorescent light.
Okay. Well, you hear Bob kind of pushing us off the air right now. So, Christy McCrackus, thank you for being on Veterans Radio. Your book is Seduced by Secrets, about the East German Stasi. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Marine Scholars Fund, Quantum Physical Therapy, Legal Help for Vets, Len Pitlack, CPA, Schrader Yacht Sales in New Jersey, Pat the Handyman, and Sperry Van Ness Lillian Associates, that's me. Next week, listen to Dale Thronberry with Donut Dollies. Until that time, you are dismissed.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of our guests and are not necessarily those of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.
Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnegat Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.